All right, it's 6:32. I'm late tonight. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Esri?
Here.
Farney?
Here.
Locke?
Here.
Pugh?
Present.
Rodriguez?
Here.
Sexton?
Here.
Storr?
Present.
I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda and addendum. Sexton, second by Storr. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Great. Approval of the minutes from the February 24th, 2025 meeting. Farney, Esri, any discussion?
I have.
Oh, okay.
I was absent for that meeting. I'm marked as being present.
Oh, we got to fix that. All right. With that friendly amendment made where we strike Mr. Farney and remind the voters he was absent.
Wait, strike Mr. Farney? You've been talking to Mrs. Farney.
All right, with that friendly amendment, all in favor to approve the minutes minus Mr. Farney's presence. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, moving on. I have no slips. I see no public, so we'll move along. Communications. Any board member communications? Rocking through this. You guys have never seen a meeting this fast. All right, we're moving on to new business. We have probation and court services. Everybody but Brett will remember that once upon a time we had approved $2,000 for probation to use to shuttle probationers with opioid use disorder to inpatient treatment in Springfield. And we had done this because there's a manpower issue with having to transport them ourselves. After the state's attorney's review, they just asked that we add the contract language here and that we have the master agreement. So we can first, I would entertain a motion to approve the intergovernmental agreement with the Probation and Court Services Department for Transportation and Treatment. Mr. Sexton's arm was up almost the whole time, so he is making the motion. Second? All right, Mr. Farney, is there any discussion of this? Okay. No discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. Moving on, we also have the Master Agreement for Transportation Services. Now, this is what Shannon or whoever is in charge of probation, if she would ever leave us, she's not allowed. But if she would, this is what the Director of Probation will this is the contract they will execute with a transportation provider. And I believe we just have to approve that. So, in light of that, can I have a motion to approve the Master Agreement for Transportation Services? Ms. Rodriguez, second Mr. Esri. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that passes. Moving on, we have the coroner, a request for Randox Evidence Multistat Analyzer. The first part is discussion. We'll hear from Lori, come on forward. You know the drill. Turn the microphone on. We'll hear from the coroner, and then we'll vote on it. You'll note there's some differences in our agenda. It's to satisfy concerns from the state's attorney's office, how this is set up. It's all fine. All right. With that, Lori, can you just tell we've talked about this a bunch, but can you let the board know and then let anybody who might be listening, what are we asking for and why do we need it?
Push it.
There you go.
Okay, perfect.
Perfect.
Hello. So I'm asking for a Randox analyzer. What this will do is put it in our office, a machine that we can test for the toxicology for different substances. We'll have those results within 30 minutes of the test. And what that'll do for our office is let us know if a decedent overdosed. this will help in a couple different ways. It'll help with us not doing autopsies. If we have a cause of death, we don't need to do the autopsy. A lot of times for people that we suspect are overdoses, we have to do an autopsy in case they didn't overdose. Maybe they might have a history of it, but they didn't overdose in that instance, and then we don't have a cause of death. So we'll do the autopsy in case the toxicology comes back negative. Most of the time it doesn't, and then we've done the autopsy where we really just needed to do tox, but we didn't know that. So this would let us have those results before we even needed to schedule the autopsy. It'll also help with the community because we can let public health know that we've got multiple overdoses. It happens a lot, but we don't really know because we don't have those toxicology results back. We can tell them, which I have, like, hey, we've had a few, four or five in a weekend, but they might be in different areas, so they're not all in Champaign, they're not all in Urbana, they're kind of spread out, but we know because we were there. And so then we can say, well, we don't really know if they were overdoses. We think they were, but 8 weeks later, it doesn't really help public health in that weekend.
So, Lori, when you say 8 weeks later, is that how long we have to wait for toxicology generally?
Yes, yeah, 4 to 8 weeks. 6 is about average. If they're negative, we can get them back in 2 weeks. Once in a while, we get them in 4, and we're like, whoa. But most of the time, it's 6 to 8 weeks.
So that absolutely doesn't help with notifying the public when there's a bad batch.
Correct.
But if we had 15 minutes.
Correct.
Yes.
It also delays that death certificate. If we have the results that day and we know what their cause of death is, we can sign that death certificate out. Even when they get an autopsy, and we can't sign out that death certificate until the toxicology comes back.
Ms. Rodriguez?
Sure. So as somebody who's like personally familiar with the steps that come when a loved one close to you dies of an overdose, two questions that I have, some of which I know the answers, but I would like to be, talked through in public. What does it mean for our grant applications if we have an accurate understanding and count of deaths by overdose?
I have no idea.
Kate, do you have any thoughts on that? Having an accurate count?
In my experience, data is everything. The numbers are everything for getting funding, and especially specific to our area.
Thank you.
Sorry, I have no experience with that at all.
This is something that maybe it was the wrong question to ask. But
yeah.
I can tell you, as a statement, I mean, it is so crucial to have an understanding of, something to reflect back to people who are offering grants, specific to population counts for people who have been impacted by the opioid epidemic. But on the other side of the coin of that, I know the concern is also privacy. So, for example, how a death is reported. So I hear Kate saying, having an accurate count is really important.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that one point of concern when how they report a death is, like, do they want an overdose as listed as a cause of death? Or do they say something a little bit more neutral like heart attack or heart issue, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Can
so
you
I've
talk
actually
about
just,
that process? And, go ahead.
Oh, good. Having this conversation twice today, I know that I'm going to keep better records when a person asks for our numbers. What's our overdose numbers? It's easy to go through and find the cause of death as an overdose. Those are easy. What we don't include that I've seen anywhere that we've ever included up till now is when a person tests positive, but that wasn't their cause of death. I can't really keep great track of those because they're not all my cases. It would be easier to keep track of them if all the toxicology came through me. But like the one today was a car accident. They tested positive for a lot of things, but that's not necessarily what killed them. The car accident killed them. So an overdose isn't listed, or the toxicology isn't listed even as a contributing factor.
It's just cause of death. There's no
just
contributing
cause
factors.
Of death. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And part of that is because of how it would be reported, oftentimes through obituaries.
No,
very public.
Through our office is what I mean. But we wouldn't list the overdose or the substance in their system might not be an overdose because that wasn't their cause of death. So we don't keep track of those.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions, Mr. Pugh?
Thank you. Two quick things here. If we could, for procedure, because we do have attachments here. I know the CUPHD did it actually too. Can we actually have them point to actually the uses and stuff like that to our attachments? So, like, you know, this is like the minoxidil, this is this, this is that.
So the appendix is just the boilerplate mandatory. This is, you cannot use it for anything outside of this.
Yeah.
This is all cleared through the state's attorneys at this point. So, I mean, going forward, we can make requests, but.
Because I know that CUPHD did it. They actually said this is what, you know, how it applies.
Yeah.
I think they used to be
so
very
theirs
helpful.
Is for an ongoing, like, we're going to use this money over the course of time, and this is a one-time purchase.
No, I get that. Yeah. It's in the future, though. That way,
okay.
you know. I don't have to go with, like, you know, 30 different items. Okay, is it this one? Is it this one? Is it this one?
Okay. Well, yeah. I'll give the feedback to the people who make the contracts. Yeah, there's Kate.
I just wanted to add that Chairlock recently approved an application that we've started using so that applicants can identify at the beginning of the application process which uses they'll be fulfilling. And they're identified in all of the agreements. So the ones between, like, what we'd be signing and they'd be signing, they do actually list out the approved uses. That's harm reduction and testing.
Ms. Rodriguez?
Lastly, I just want to point out, too, if it's not apparent, the use and how it's, you know, applicable for harm reduction purposes. I've been running on this since my primary election, right? It's not just keeping this data that is good for, or, you know, for any other reason, showing some kind of closure or whatever to families. This actually gets us money. So if that's not clear, or I think maybe before the meeting, that could be a good time to run through questions like this. But again, I just want to say how excited I am that our funds are being used and by a person who I know will use them correctly.
Sorry. No, that's fine. I just, you know, basically, you know, so it's like a more like one-to-one thing. I can go here and look at there. Okay, that is.
Moving forward, we'll try and make sure that we'll make sure that what you get.
Well, I know CUPHD did that, so it's just basically I can look right there. Okay, this goes to that. And it's pretty much, you know, very obvious then.
Any questions for Lori? Mr. Farney.
In looking at the information you included, Lori, do we know kind of a life expectancy of this unit? How long do you think before you'll have to get another one? Do you know anything about how long they usually are operational for, or anything like that?
Sorry. I didn't ask that, I guess. They didn't bring that up ever, but there's a maintenance plan.
Okay.
For each, you know, that you can use. They're not that old. They've only been in the United States, I think, 3 years. They've been in over in Europe. So I don't know, even know that they have that yet, but you can purchase like a maintenance plan after the first 3 years, I think. It's not required, but they can give you like online support and updates and maintenance and stuff. So it's not like an hourly charge.
Okay. And then does this, the $79,000, does that include any kind of a yearly maintenance, or does it need to be certified, calibrations, anything like that?
So it comes with 3 years.
Okay. All right.
And this includes 1 year's worth of supplies. So
okay.
You do have to get like the pipettes, the little cassette things. I think
sure.
They call them little cassette things. So they come with 1 year.
Are they proprietary, or can we buy them from, let's say this company were to go out of business or something like that?
No other company. There's not even another machine.
Okay. All right. All right. And then
no other in Illinois either. We'd be the first.
You mentioned in your memo about other county uses. Have you talked with any other departments about how, like, doing drug testing for drug testing for the jails, doing employment screening, things like that? Mm-hmm. Have you talked with any about
only
how
other
that
coroners?
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Lori, one thing that I guess I want to make clear, like, so there will be a cost going forward of buying the various supplies, but mm-hmm. there's also a cost right now of sending samples out to the outside lab. How do these compare?
So to do, not including purchasing the machine, just to do each test is $40 to $50. You can do two at a time. You don't have to. So if you only do one, it's like $50. But if you do two, it's $25. Right now, to send them out, it's $380. And I just got the price increase for the next 2 years. So it's going up significantly. And we do toxicology on every autopsy.
And
right now it's $280, right? $380. It's almost $400 per test. And they broke it down by percent. Like, it's going up 4% for staff raises and 20% for supplies, like just the increased supply. They broke it down.
Would this test be admissible for court purposes, or if the state's attorney wants state lab, that's still
Julia
something?
And I have talked about okay. that, and she said we'd do it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
If anyone she needs, we'd send it out.
Okay. Chris, and then back to Brett.
Thank you. I wonder, what actually is tested? Is it blood, and where is the blood, or where is the stuff drawn from? I'm kind of curious about what the black box is or does.
So it's the same that we would do now. We draw the labs. We draw blood, urine, and vitreous, as long as they have it. We usually have to send 2 tubes of blood. I think it's like 5 mLs minimum each one to NMS. These do it with a drop. I can't remember how much it said, but it's like significantly less. And sometimes that's all we can get. So we're excited about that part of it. It tests like 600. There's a list in here this booklet I have, if anybody wants to see it, of what it draws. It looks like the same things, just like with NMS. If we want specific things, we have to order those separate. So we'd have to send those out if we needed a specific test done. We can't do that with this one. But this does test blood and urine and vitreous, whichever we need.
Okay, I kind of talked with you a little bit about this before, but maybe a broader thing for the actual committee here or task force. So this thing could probably, especially, it saves you money, and you could possibly charge outside counties for the testing. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, future supplies and stuff, you'd probably be able to come from your own office over time. Future supplies or anything like that, because mm-hmm. you'd be saving money or charging extra money too. Future supplies would be able to come out.
Yeah,
your
the
own
only
budget.
Thing we truly have to get to turn off again. Truly have to get from them are the cassettes, the pipettes, things like that. We can get from any supplier, so we could probably find something cheaper, and definitely charge other counties, which they've expressed interest in. Would help us out too if we could do 2 tests at once.
Yeah,
you know, little cost savings.
Yeah, I'm just trying to say, you know, this is like literally just a one-time charge for us. It's not going to keep coming back like $5,000 or $6,000 a year.
Right, right. And to put it in perspective, my budget each year, and this one was down from last year for toxicology, $65,000.
So it'll save you a lot of money. And good. Okay. Thank you.
Aaron.
Laura, you mentioned right now it's $380 per test. Roughly how many do you know roughly how much you're spending, your office is spending per year on tests total, or at least how many tests on average you're sending
yeah,
out?
So like I said, the budget's $65,000. I don't, I'm not
okay.
great at math, but in 2023 we did 250 toxicology tests,
yeah.
196 in 2024, and then so far this year we've done 75. But then when we have to add on those special tests, like one specific test is $700 to add on. So we don't do that very often, but sometimes we
so
have
it's a,
to.
It's a good chunk of change, to say
it,
the
it
least.
It really is.
Okay. Thanks.
But really, the better part is that we have it in 30 minutes.
No, I was just going to comment. I did quick math, and this machine pays for itself in 1 to 2 years, honestly. And, yes, getting the toxicology reports – within 30 minutes, it's going to help all the parties involved in the process. So I think this is great.
Yeah, because then if you want to go further, it's cost savings if we don't have to do an autopsy.
All right, Brett?
Maybe we could trade coroner services for this machine services with other counties we have around us.
I like the way you think. All right. If there's no other discussion on this, I would entertain a motion for item B2, intergovernmental agreement with the coroner's office and Randox Evidence Multistat Analyzer. Chris, Emily, second. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Congratulations. This goes to the full board on Thursday.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Moving on. Champaign-Urbana Public Health. Joe, do you want to come on up? This one, we have a request to expand harm reduction services. The dollar amount you'll find on page 76 in your packet. Welcome back.
Hi.
Took us to heart when Emily said, we want to give you more money. Ask us for more.
I said, okay.
Welcome back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think you're our first third-time attendee.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Can you let us know and let anybody who might listen, the like three listeners that we have to
sure.
the recording, what are you asking for? What do you need?
Yeah, so we have three specific things that were included on this request. The first one is very similar to the request last time, but more specific for a broader range of harm reduction supplies. So we put an estimate of the amount of supplies that we would give out during a 12-month period. Our previous request was primarily just for syringes because we had a funding shortage to buy those. This is for all the other supplies that are used for harm reduction practice. There's a wide variety of supplies that people need in order to prevent passing disease when injecting a drug. So these are the most common. These are stuff that clients really want, they really use, and it really, really helps them reduce their harms preventing disease passage through injection drug use. So that's one part of it. And then the other two pieces, the easier one is Sharps disposal. So we don't have a great option right now for place for clients to be able to come and drop off whatever supplies that they have used that they want to dispose of. And so what we have now is not really designed for this purpose. And so what we're proposing is a specifically designed harm reduction kiosk or a Sharps disposal kiosk is what it's called. So it's kind of like a heavy duty, about the size of a postal mailbox, that would allow people to dispose of whatever sharps in there. There's no technology with it. It's all just mechanical. So someone could just drive up, drop off whatever supplies they want in that, and then we would come in then dispose of those supplies through our regular sharps disposal options. And then the last option, or the third option, is a vending machine. So this is something that's become really popular in a lot of harm reduction programs all over the U.S., the style that we use is just like an outdoor storage box that we bought during 2020, during the pandemic, and became a really popular option for our clients. So rather than them having to come into the building and speak to us and get whatever supplies they wanted, we wanted them to be able to access the supplies that we, provide during the times that we're not open. So nights and weekends. What we have now is just this old storage box that is rusty and falling apart. So moving to this model, so this is a harm reduction vending machine that's very widely used throughout the U.S. It would allow us to put a variety of different products in there, and it would also allow us to have better tracking and data to know how many clients are coming to visit us and who are they. Right now, we don't know who is rolling up to get supplies out of that. We don't have any control over that. But this would allow us to give clients a code or a card or something, but that would also allow us then to collect some data on Who are they? Where are they from? Our program is anonymous, so we don't collect any high detailed information, but we do like to know where people are from, and we have to record some basic demographic information about them. So we'd get better data, a little bit better control over what kind of supplies go out, and kind of provide more of an updated service than what we currently have.
Emily.
So you probably don't even remember this, but years ago, I went to your office and we talked a little bit about Sharps boxes that would be, I don't want to say portable, but I mean, like site specific, right?
Yeah.
Would there be a way, I hear you saying that tracking and whatnot, connecting information would be helpful. Is there a way that we could connect site specific uses, emptying off at a Sharps site like this? Or would that be contained by the person?
No, the disposal kiosk is there's no technology on that. So that would all just be whoever is wanting to throw something away could throw something away in there. So that one doesn't have any type of tracking or anything like that. We still give out a lot of Sharps containers to our clients, and they bring a lot of those back to us, or we go and pick them up. So we know it that way. You know, we know some disposal that way. But this device would just be basically like a Dropbox.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
JJ?
I want to make sure I understood you. So right now the process is that a client comes in and actually has to talk to somebody to get the supplies that they need.
Yeah, during
business hours.
Yeah, business hours, yep.
Would they still be doing that during business hours, and this would only be for outside of the vending machine, would only be for outside of business hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because we still want to maintain that best practice is for them to come in and talk to someone, because we like to show them that we care about them. We like to talk about how they are, identify any other needs, provide appropriate referrals. Like, all that's really important to us.
Brett?
I have two questions, but I'll let somebody jump in the middle. So where are the location of the vending machine be?
It would be at our building at our public health site. So we have, it would be basically where we have it now. We would take out the
old. I know where this is. I pick up actually for people on Sunday for the food pantry. So I know exactly where these are.
Okay, yeah.
I guess my thought maybe about vandalism there possibly. Is it plexiglass front end or something like this?
Yeah, so the.
It'll be bolted down.
Yeah, it's bolted down. And this, the one that I propose is one that's rated for outdoor use. It would be bolted down and wired. There's security cameras and lights in that area. And we're also looking to possibly build out a little more like kind of weather protection for it too, just to help kind of keep the rain off. The location where we have the old box now, we're thinking of maybe if we do get the vending machine, doing it in a different area of the building that would still have kind of similar features of security and light, but be
maybe
a
more upfront or something
a
like
little
that.
More accessible. That might be a little easier for someone to drive up in a car and get the supplies that they want, whereas now they have to kind of walk up a ramp. But that would also help us transition from, here's our old device, it's going to go away soon, our new device is over here, go get signed up for it, go get, you know, go check it out. So that way we can kind of help people transition into the new one.
Go ahead, ask your second question.
I'm trying to remember from last time when you talked here a few months ago, were there grants you were getting to help for supplies before or anything like that?
There were, and we did get a little bit. We're using that funding primarily for syringes just because it was allowing us to, because it was not federal dollars. So we did get some additional funding to buy syringes through the state.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see, because it could be a yearly thing, which is fine, but I'm just trying to see if we get grants or whatever else that kind of, maybe we could keep some of that money and go to somebody else too later in the future. I'm just trying to see,
Yeah. I mean, we're always going to be looking for grant opportunities to buy either syringes or supplies, because that's our kind of our number one expense with this type of program.
Okay, thank you.
Ed?
You said people would have to sign in to get this?
Yeah. So
there's some kind of security to it, at least. They can't just come up and empty the machine.
Right. And so that's something that is important to us, because we have had people come up and empty the whole machine we think, we're not sure exactly, but with our current technology, they can do that. This would allow us to have a little bit more control over how much someone could take, how often they could come back, that type of thing. And it would let us know, okay, this particular individual is coming every week. They take about this much. It would help us do a little bit better planning and design about how our products go out.
Any other? Brett?
I'm going to make a bad joke, and just don't put the Sharps disposal next to the vote by mail, because they're actually really close in size and look like the same.
Yeah.
That is not a joke. That is a very good suggestion.
No. Yeah, it's not going to be, their drop-off's going to be probably near the vending machine or something like that, so.
All right, seems like discussion's dying down. I would entertain a motion to approve an agreement with CUPHD for the purchase of harm reduction equipment and supplies. Emily, second. Ed, any discussion? All right, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that passes as well. Goes to the full board on Thursday. You should be hearing from us soon.
Great, thank you.
All right. Next steps. Our upcoming requests are from local fire protection districts and first responders. We're looking to get the money further out into the community. From when we used the GIS data, we saw that it's not just here, it's at all points of the county. So we're looking to help them out. And that brings us to the date of the next meeting with their very high-tech survey. We have Monday, June 16th, and Monday, June 23rd, we have the most people available. So in the absence of any objection, I'm going to say Monday, June 16th will be our next meeting. We can vote to give some more of our settlement funds into the community and remedy some harm. And
Point of order. Can we get where are we on funding right now and how much we have left?
Kate actually has the answer to this available at this moment because she answered this question earlier today.
Would you just like the total?
Yeah, so I've got some people in the community who are interested in applying, and I just want to make sure that the asks they're making are reasonable.
How much we have right now, and then also how much we expect to get over the next 15 years.
Okay. I will have to get back to you with part two of that. But for part one, including the requests that are currently kind of pending, it's $412,548.72.
Golden. Okay.
And then we're expecting about $90,000 a year for the next 14 years at this point. So, there's still a big chunk of change that can do a lot of good in the community and fix the harm it's there for. Chair's report is only a thank you to Chris Storr for his time serving on this task force, and in addition to all the other things, but you're here right now, so thank you very much. We'll miss you here. Whoever sits there won't fill your shoes.
It's been an honor and a privilege to work with everybody, and I wish the board well, and especially this important task force that doing so much for our community and trying to help a hurting world.
Well, thank you. And with that, 7:06, I call this meeting adjourned.